RadioAlbion.com.
We're Knights of the Round Table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes with footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 30th of December 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I know you were expecting to hear an Aerion Britannia today, but Max is unable to make it. But I was able to get Grandpa Lampshade and Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson together today for another of our round tables, which did go down very well last week, judging by the comments. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. Grandpa, good afternoon to you. Matt, how are you doing?
Well, I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it last week. There was a movement thing and Christmas party out in Cleveland. So I had completely forgotten about it. So I apologize to the listeners who had to suffer my absence.
Well, it's a rare thing
okay.
That you get
that's
this.
We're here now.
It's a rare thing that you get this great meeting of the minds in one place. You know, all the stars have to align just right.
It is frightening.
Well, with it being the day before the last day of the year as well, I guess you could say that. Well, I don't know if you've been on one of these roundtables before, Matt. I know obviously me and Grandpa have done them for quite some time now, actually, although the last one was about 3 years back. But basically, it's a question of bringing something to the table and discussing it. And last week's one, as I say, it did go very well. People did seem to appreciate that we were covering positive news stories. So I thought we would continue that this week and bring another three positive news stories to the table, because I do think 2019 hasn't been too bad of a year. And the first news story I really wanted to talk about was Charlie Kirk and the Groyper uprising, which really impressed me. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Grandpa probably has. Charlie Kirk was this conservative, part of Conservative Inc., and he's part of Turning Point USA. Basically, a fake conservative that is just promoting more immigration, more globo homo, more love for Israel. It's just the same as they always have done before, but this is a young guy doing this, so they're trying to appeal to the youngsters. And Nick Fuentes managed to get a group of Zoomers together that went to these meetings that Charlie Kirk was having and questioning him on certain topics because he was having these Q&A sessions. And they basically made headline news with some of the questions they were asking him. They were putting things into the comments such as, do you like dancing Israelis? Google dancing Israelis. And Charlie Kirk, of course, thought that he was talking about an Israeli dance troupe, not that it was actually about 9/11. So this went on, and they were asking him questions about why conservatism is promoting gay sex. And they had this black homosexual that was actually on stage at the time, and he just tried to deflect the subject and start talking about something else. I think he said, tell me who likes Cardi B or something like that. They asked him about immigration. I think the best part of it was seeing him actually chased off of a university campus by a mob chanting America first, America first. And this was after this Charlie Kirk had turned up at the university with an old television set and a VCR, apparently hoping to be able to play a recording of Nick Fuentes making a joke about the Holocaust. And his technology didn't work, and he was unable to work out which buttons to press. So he looked a complete fool, and he was just chased off of campus. And as if that wasn't good enough, on top of that, E. Michael Jones is the guy that these activists look to for inspiration. And because this hit the headline news, E. Michael Jones hit the headline news as well. And he got masses of support through that and masses of exposure through that. And I think 2019 has been a very, very good year for E. Michael Jones, sort of culminating in this Groyper uprising that ended up totally discrediting Charlie Kirk, totally discrediting Turning Point USA, setting an example for every other nationalist in the world. You know, this idea of go along to these hustings, go along to these events, the Q&As, and stand up and ask them uncomfortable questions and film it. because Nick Fuentes was getting far more views for him asking these questions than Charlie Kirk was with his Turning Point extravaganza. So, you know, that to me was a very, very positive thing. Lots of positive effects. As I say, E. Michael Jones getting lots more respect, Nick Fuentes getting his name out there, mainstream conservatism being ridiculed, and these points being highlighted in the mainstream press that we disagree with. So all in all, a very positive thing. Matt, what do you make of this? I don't think you'd heard of this until I spoke to you about it. Had you?
Well, yes, I had, but I didn't know it had a name. I never was a big fan of these cartoon characters, but if it attracts the young people and creates some kind of a way to parody them, then I'm all for it. Now I watched that E. Michael Jones changed my life, 25 years ago, when I first came across him, and I'm happy to see this. I didn't realize this was the Catholic movement, generally speaking. But you know, E. Michael Jones has always skirted that borderline between fame and obscurity, because like me in the Orthodox world, he's banned from most mainstream functions. But that's obviously not kept him from developing. He's been independent for a really long time. We have a lot in common. We've both been fired from academic institutions. Academic institutions very similar. In fact, the same name. One in Maryland and one in Indiana. And he's one of the best writers we have, if not the best writer we have. Now, I noticed that the methods that they're using, and I watched this kid. I forget what university that was, the dancing Israeli thing. And he suggested that this is about actual dancing in Israel. And this is a guerrilla tactic to avoid censorship. Because if he just came out and said this is about 9/11, it would have been removed. It would have been, he could have made a case out of it. But no, he made it sound like he's really talking about literal dancing and the dance troupe in Israel. And then, oh, yeah, you need to Google dancing Israelis. It's really great. So this is it's a way to get around censorship. It's a guerrilla warfare approach to this. And it proves that they can't shut us up. You know, after Charlottesville, we put so many men into the street and they were able to destroy us with lawfare. But now, that doesn't mean the ideas get silenced. It just means that we use these guerrilla tactics. And I'm really happy. I didn't hear about the stupid VCR issue and getting chased off campus, something ridiculous. And so the whole point of this is it kind of like YAF used to be, Young Americans for Freedom, which used to revolve around William F. Buckley and the Barnes Review and was going to college campuses. We did the same thing with them many, many years ago. And it was the same approach, making sure that conservatives don't become Buchananites and stay on the neocon plantation, so to speak. And their ideology is so bland and so watered down that it doesn't really impact anybody. There's nothing radical about it. There's nothing edgy about it. There's nothing interesting about it. And given that we're in a crisis in this country, it doesn't, because I'm pretty sure that this guy is functioning on grants from one of these organizations. And that's where he's getting his money from. So seeing him shut down with this watered down, semi-Buckleyite ideology is a lot of fun. And it's using guerrilla tactics, and he knows it. And it's really hard to pin these kids down because they're couching their comments in mainstream and even trivial ideas to get around censors. And it's absolutely brilliant. I love these kids.
Yeah, it was glorious to see. Absolutely glorious to see. I take your point there that it's different tactics. It's different to demonstrating or leafleting. I mean, you try and get a demonstration together and it can all turn into a debacle like Charlottesville. And this is something that people can do on their own. They could just go along to these Q&As and they could even make themselves look like they're on the left or make themselves look like they're big supporters of the MAGA agenda and then get up there and ask these questions. Grandpa, what did you make of it?
Well, it highlights a brilliant strategy as far as demonstrating the opportunities for, you know, IRL street activism. We get locked into this single mindset, you know, and people think if you say IRL activism, they think, well, you have to be out on the streets and have a protest. But I mean, that only takes you so far. I mean, yeah, it doesn't. I mean, you have a two counter protests going on. I'm not saying those aren't necessarily things worthy of doing, but when you have, you know, two counter protests going on, I mean, everybody present has their views. I mean, one side screaming at the other isn't going to convince anyone from the other side to change their views, and people that are ambivalent either way aren't going to show up to watch this screaming match that very well could devolve into street violence. They're not going to go there to get their information. But a tactic like this is a great example of the opportunities for IRL activism. I mean, you take what they give you, and in this Charlie Kirk, this turning point example, they give you the opportunity because, oh, we're going to have a question and answer session, because they're so stupid. They think everyone's going to, they're so clever. They think they're so clever that everyone's going to wind up being convinced by them and just be like asking them, you know, watered down stupid questions. So they foolishly allow this question and answer session, and people have taken advantage of that opportunity to stand up there and ask, and I'll say by and large, they asked smart questions. If you would have had people show up there and just start ranting about the Jews, it would have looked stupid and it wouldn't have accomplished anything. But they asked real pertinent, smart questions. Well, why does all our foreign policy have to center around Israel? I'm against, you know, things like I'm against foreign aid to all countries. Why are we obligated to give foreign aid to Israel? They things were worded in a very intelligent way, and that's white pilling. It's white pilling that we have people that are awake to these issues, these real issues, that are intelligent enough to consider how they word their stuff instead of going up there and screaming and looking like a lunatic. And then they were locked in because they had opened up question and answer, opened up this opportunity. And then once people showed up and grabbed a hold of that opportunity, then they're in a pickle because they can't show up and do these presentations, because it's supposed to, whole selling point of it is it's supposed to be this opportunity on these college campuses for people to interact with these brilliant conservative minds. So that was the whole selling point. So they can't then, it is very difficult for them then to say, well, we're going to do this, but there won't be any questions and answers. We're shutting that down. We're just going to lecture to you, because then nobody would have showed up. So they were kind of caught in a trap, and it's a really good strategy. And I think it's something that people need to keep in mind moving forward, that when these people show up and they give you an opportunity, look at what they're giving you instead of trying to just, you know, force something that doesn't fit. Well, let's say, okay, well, what kind of opportunity are they giving? Well, you know, that can be used, you know, as a weakness. And in this case, it was the whole thing of having a question and answer session, because they didn't really want questions. They wanted people to sit there and agree with them. And it got more and more ludicrous. The whole showing up with a VCR, that right there states that he was having to go so far back to try to defame Nick Fuentes. And honestly, Nick Fuentes himself, regardless of what you think of the person, is almost irrelevant. It is, I mean, he's relevant in the fact that, you know, he was the one promoting this. But the fact that they had to go way back to find a VCR tape to try to discredit. It's the same old grid. It's always funny because these neocon, these conservative ink people, it's amazing how quickly you pick up the tactics of the left. They couldn't counter any of the actual questions, so what they did was they tried to go with a disqualify tactic, which is a go-to tactic of the commies. And, oh, we've got this VCR tape, and we're gonna really disqualify them, and by extension, disqualify any of these legitimate questions that people are asking. You have people that support Trump, you have MAGA people show up to this turning point thing, and then you have people ask real, relevant questions. And they don't have an answer for it because they don't have an ideology. They don't have anything. It's just, as y'all both have already pointed out, it's just an attempt to keep people on the reservation. You know, you're allowed to oppose the commie agenda as long as it's only window dressing. Is they want to keep that same game going. You know, conservatives, the conservatism opposes this outrageous demand of the commies. And then we'll compromise and give them half of what they want. And then in a few years, that very same thing, it's a part of our conservative values. And it's always been. And when he paraded around with the homosexual black guy, it just made a caricature of it. Nobody else made him do that. This is how silly these people are. And they're supposed to be highly intelligent. This was the best conservative ink could trot out there. And they thought that this would look good. And instead, it was a perfect caricature of this false conservative ideology here in America. We couldn't have made a better meme. And they trotted this all out. And people asked smart questions. They took advantage of the opportunities given. And it was overall very successful because people that showed up that aren't, you know, cued in to necessarily haven't thought about these things. People that are just like Trump supporters and, oh, this is supposed to be a conservative deal. I'm a conservative. And they showed up and they saw people ask intelligent questions that maybe got them to thinking about things in a way that they hadn't thought of before. People sit here and say, well, yeah, I'm against foreign aid against all these countries. Why are we obligated to give foreign aid to Israel? Why do these people act as though Israel is another state of the United States? It seems just preposterous on his face. And the most successful, you know, if you're changing minds, if you're making people realize, the most successful, only way I would even say to do that is to get people to come to that conclusion on their own. You can't convince anybody of these things. I mean, the best you could do is try to get them to start considering things on their own to where they feel as though they come to these conclusions on their own. They haven't been convinced by somebody else. And I think in that area, I think this was very, very successful. It was really, really great because you saw them fumble around trying to react. You had the VCR thing, and then they were like, well, they tried to cherry pick who could comment. Then they tried to work all around it, and it all just, everything they tried to counter this basically blew up in their face. And I how can you not think that's a great thing?
They ended up actually shutting down comments altogether, and they got so much stick over that, particularly when they brought Donald Trump Jr. in, and he was actually booed, and he thought they were booing at him, but the booing was because the question and answer session had been removed. So they just ended up with egg all over their faces. And, you know, I think that's a good point that you make there, Grandpa, about putting these things before people so that they can come to these conclusions for themselves, so they don't feel as if they're being preached to or whatever. They're just being told something like Google Israelis. They haven't actually been told what that's about, or Google dancing Israelis, and then they go and look at it and then they realize it for themselves, what it's actually talking about. So they've discovered this thing for themselves, and they've come to their own conclusions, which is far better than preaching to people. I mean, you can do all you can to wake people up, but what it comes down to is nobody likes waking up. No, I mean, nobody likes even waking up in the morning. They don't like being woken up to what's really going on around them. You know, they want to wake up themselves in their own time, and all we can do is just put the information before them in a way that it's themselves that realize the truth of it and come to the conclusions that we want them to reach. I mean, it was. I also liked the cartoon aspect of this, and the cartoon imagery of Charlie Kirk with his ever expanding head and his face that seemed to keep getting smaller and smaller as the memes went along, and this idea of calling them groypers as well, that comes from the Pepe imagery. And again, it's nice to see that it was young people doing this. It was Gen Zs, Zoomers. I mean, Nick Fuentes, he's a gamer in his own right. He has a gaming channel, and then he has his American First show, where he basically sticks to Donald Trump's original campaign promises. Because this was another accusation that was leveled at them, was that they don't support Donald Trump because Donald Trump supports Israel and supports legal immigration, but that wasn't part of his campaign, was it? And the America First guys are sticking to what Donald Trump's campaign promises were, and they're trying to keep him to those promises. It's Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA that have ended up being deterred from the actual path of conservatism. I mean, what is it they're trying to conserve? Basically just liberal values instead of actually going back to conservative traditional values. Right. Well, I don't know if either of you have got any more that you want to say about that, or shall we move on to what you've got to bring us this week, Grandpa?
Well, again, I think it just bears reiterating that this was handled very well. This is, I guess, what I would say is this is an illustration of how you do it, and I think it's important not to get stuck in this. This is the only way you can do IRL activism is street protesting. I mean, whenever you're presented, an opportunity, look what opportunities they give you. Your opponents will often hand you real opportunities, and you're right. It culminated with Donald Trump Jr. basically being booed and basically like running away from the event, because again they shut down the question and answer, which again that's the corner they got painted into, because they started with it. This was supposed to be an interactive thing, and then they had to shut down the interaction because they didn't like what people were saying. And again, it's just a really, this is how you do it. It was handled smartly. You know, people looked intelligent. They asked intelligent questions. You know, this is the way you do it. I mean, again, I don't think people should get bogged down. Well, I don't like this guy. And I don't, you know, this, that, what, this is how you do it. Before we jump off, Dr. Johnson, do you have anything else on it?
People often ask me how I got through college and grad school being like this. And that's exactly how I did it. It's all in how you behave and how you couch the questions. You're not lecturing. You're not mouthing off the minute you get there. You show everybody that you're a nice guy and that you're reasonable. And then in class and elsewhere, you ask questions in exactly this way. You couch it in mainstream terms, but you make sure that it's that it points our way. And after a while, it becomes second nature. Now, I'm just hoping that the universities don't retaliate against these kids, because my friend at the University of Nebraska was driven out after Charlottesville, Daniel Cleave. And I, as a doctoral alumnus there, wasn't permitted to write a letter to the editor of the student newspaper. I was cut out. So because these guys are on camera, you know, I'm hoping that there isn't action taken against them. But if there is, it just goes to show that the neocon leftist idea is one single establishment. They're stodgy. They're purely establishmentarian, non-radical, boring, and they'll join forces to destroy the only radicals left in America, which is us.
Yeah, and I think that I think it'd be hard for them to come after these people, because again, they weren't up there ranting about the Jews. They were just asking what anybody would consider reasonable questions. Again, it's a smart tactic. I think it would be really tough for the universities to go after these guys. I hope so. As far as what I'm bringing to the table, when I'm asked to bring something positive to the table, that's a very tall order for me, because I'm a glass half empty kind of guy much of the time. But we had the case that was big news all around the country of this poor child, the 7-year-old James Younger, and as everybody I'm sure is aware of the story, his lunatic mother, this Anne, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Gorgulis, decided he's trans, and it was obvious that she was pushing this poor child to be trans, probably for nothing more than social media signaling points for likes on Facebook. Well, the child's father, this woman's estranged husband, who's apparently not a lunatic, of course, did not want this to happen. The child was fine being a boy whenever he was with his dad. And he was opposed. But this woman, she was pushing to start this small child on hormone blockers at 7 years old. Well, just kind of as a quick review, the father took this woman to court. And I'm going to be dishing out black pills along with white pills with this. And the father took the woman to court to a jury. In Texas, this is the blackpilling part, by the way, took this lunatic to court with a jury in Texas and lost badly. 11-1, they sided with the lunatic mother. Now, if that isn't That isn't discouraging. Where's the positive part, Grandpa? We're going to get to that. If that isn't discouraging, I don't know what is. I there's a quite a good possibility that this guy had a lawyer that was really, really bad at jury selection. That's the only thing I can come up with. His lawyer was completely inept when it comes to jury selection. But either way, he lost 11-1. Well, the man took the fight to the internet, and it got traction. Of course, not with the mainstream media. But it got traction. It started getting circulated, and people got mad. I will even go so far. People were pissed. This, and there was this huge outrage. The outrage got to the point that it couldn't be ignored. It didn't matter how much the mainstream media ignored this story. Now, to get to this, just fast forward to the white pilling part. He did get another court hearing because the original one basically said, yeah, lunatic mother can do whatever she wants. So they got another court hearing, and the judge in the case said, yeah, no, the father, because this woman is collecting like maximum child support out of the father, Jeffrey Younger. And at the same time, she's taking his money to abuse his child. And that's what it is. It's absolute child abuse. I don't care any way you cut it. And so they went back to court. They got another court hearing, and they got the court hearing because there was so much outrage over it. It was recognized by the governor here in the state of Texas, and it really, the outrage and the amount of people and the publicity it was getting just strictly on the internet. This wasn't really being covered in the mainstream media. So we got another court hearing, and the judge said, "Yeah, no, I don't think so. The father has got equal rights." Now, I'm a little. And some of y'all may have more details than even I do on this, but the way, my understanding, the way the final ruling was that, you know, she put the judge in this case put a gag order on both parties. They can't talk about it. And if they can't agree on a medical issue, then it goes to basically an arbitrator who will make the decision. So it's kind of gray there. Hopefully the arbitrator is sane, but if he's not, will we know about it? Because there's a gag order placed on it. But all in all, the fact that the people were outraged. Now, one of the aspects of this, again, this is a story that pretty much I'm quite confident that everybody listening to this is aware of this story and pretty much in on the details. But one of the, I think, encouraging things of this story comes from a direction probably most people honestly haven't thought about. And being a credit where due kind of guy, I think it bears mentioning. This was such a bridge too far. This was such a bridge too far that there was a significant amount of outrage over this case in the transgender community itself. I mean, you had quite a bit of transgender people on YouTube and such as this coming out and saying, this is insane. This should not be happening. No, you cannot do this to a 7-year-old child. You're going to sterilize his child. He's 7. He may decide he's a dinosaur tomorrow. He may decide he's Superman next year. I mean, this is what children do. They role play. And this poor child is obviously in a very toxic situation. He's trying to please all of his parents. And you've got this lunatic mother trying to make him trans. So, of course, he's going along with it because he's wanting to please his mother. There's this huge conflict playing out between the parents. But I think it was really encouraging that you actually had people in the transgender community saying, no, this is insane. This should not be happening. Because you have these groups that push this, and we tend to fall into that where we think, oh, yeah, well, they all think that way. But these groups are funded by other interests that have the agenda of basically destroying society. They like to use transgenders or homosexuals as the reason to do that. That way, if there's a blowback, people will strike out at those people instead of the ones basically using this as a tool. So I thought it was really encouraging that so many of the people in the transgender community even came out and spoke out and said that, yeah, no, this is absolute lunacy. So, what do y'all think?
Yeah, I remember this when it was happening. Sorry, go on, Matt.
All right. Sven, remember the two of us had a show on this. That's before the court cases occurred. It was right before the court cases occurred. I don't remember if it was the summer or what. And a few things I wanted to add. Number one, this woman is not the biological mother of that child. She's a stepmother. And that's one of the reasons that in the second case, the judge sided with him to some extent. Number two, these trans freaks, I think, were worried more about bad publicity rather than them, you know, actually having a heartfelt revulsion to this kind of thing, because manipulating children is part of their agenda. But because the outrage was so overwhelming and this woman was so shrill and obnoxious about it, that they saw the writing on the wall. Number three, the gag order, I think, if I remember correctly, the gag order was to keep any of this from getting back to the kid. People are talking about it in media. He becomes a celebrity of a sort, and this gets back to him and destroys his life. I think that's why the gag order is there. And of course, you know, finally, lawyers are agents of the court. Even though you hire them, their first loyalty is to other lawyers and to the system. So just like in our Charlottesville trials, that this lawyer probably did throw the case. Now, I don't know if he got another one or it was just pro se. Probably should just be pro se. That would make his life so much easier, because this isn't violation of their custody order. But Grandpa's absolutely right. It's to say that this is about the child support this man is being coerced to pay, and how much of this is not going to the child's best interest, but it's going to these causes, whether it be paying lawyers. I mean, I'm sure groups are paying lawyers, but the woman is not the biological mother and is unhinged. So now who they get in certain, it depends on the state, but some courts will hire a lawyer for the child, and that is usually a disaster for us. So I don't know who this guy might be. We have them in Pennsylvania. The people that, fathers' rights groups hate these guys. They come from the feminist, the domestic abuse centers in some cases. I hope that's not the case down there. So this may turn out to be a black pill after all, but at the very least, it shows the agenda of these people. I think that's exactly why the trans people, I didn't know this, that the trans people came out against it because it makes them look terrible. But I do believe that's part of the agenda. I don't think they're being honest when they came out. Or at the very least, they said, we don't know if this kid is legitimately, not legitimately, but is actually claiming that he's a girl. I think that was simply imposed on him. So this could be a white pill after all. But the fact that this guy's fighting, he's got a lot of people behind him. That's the good part of this.
Yeah, he wasn't acting like a girl, as far as I'm aware. When he was around at his father's house, he responded to the male name that he was given. He didn't want to be called Luna. He didn't want to wear dresses. He's got a twin brother who certainly didn't show any gender problems at all. And, you know, his brother would be sort of pointing at him and saying, look, you know, you're a boy, you pee standing up, you know, that sort of thing. And his dad was, you know, put on the spot there because he was under orders that he wasn't to talk about any gender issues. And how can you do that when he's got a twin brother there? And he's been told that, you know, he's not allowed to talk about anything male. It's just, you know, an impossible situation. And I think a lot of it was probably brought on by this trans advisor that the woman went to. She started thinking, well, maybe he's trans, and so she went to this counselor, this trans counselor, this rainbow counselor, who then told her, well, your son must be a girl, and the best course of action is for you to start calling him by a girl's name, dressing him in girl's clothes, and get him on these cross-sex hormones as quickly as possible. Oh, and of course, get your ex-husband to pay for it all. I mean, that's the absolute torture of this. The father was being expected to pay for his son to be tortured in this way. And they were talking about mutilating him once he got to 11 years old. They were going to cut his penis off. I mean, absolutely horrific. And it's because of that that the guy actually went public, because it's not really something you want to do is put your children in the spotlight and talk about things that are happening to them. But I think he felt that he had to do that. He had to show the world just what was going on here, just what a horrific thing he was actually being put through. And it was picked up. It was on RT. They had a half hour documentary program on this. I don't think the BBC picked up on it, but it certainly was there in the mainstream press over there in America. And it's because of that that there was such an uproar about the finding that this black female judge handed down when she said, well, he's going to stay with the mother and the mother is going to make all the decisions. And there was an absolute uproar at that. And that was because this case had been in the public eye. I mean, they'd even told you the name of the lad himself. There was a big collection that was going on to gain funds so that they could get experts in order for him to win his son back. I mean, it has to be every father's absolute worst nightmare to have something like that happen to their son, and for it to be at the hands of somebody that really that son should feel safe with the mother is just absolutely horrific. And the feeling that I had when I heard that he was going to be given to the mother, you know, I mean, just like, you know, the pit fell out from my stomach. I was just so upset about this. And then within a couple of days, the news came through that there'd been this appeal, and no, he was going to be with the father, and that ruling had been overturned, and I was just overjoyed to hear that. Really positive news story that the father won, the child won. I mean, if he wants to make his mind up to do something like that once he's an adult, once he understands the ramifications of it, then that's up to him. But to be forcing that on a young child when there is a question over it as well. I mean, the father is saying, well, no, he identifies as a boy. He plays football. He wants to wear boys' clothes. He's told me that he is only doing this because it makes his mother happy. I mean, that was part of it as well. She was, she was being mean to him when he was dressing like a boy. And he realized that if he started dressing like a girl, she would be pleased and she would be happy. And this is one of the ways that these transsexuals actually get created. There's often a family member that rewards the child with attention when they start behaving like the other gender. I mean, if you're a kid, that's all you want is you want attention. And a lot of the time your parents don't want to play with you because they're grown ups, they're adults. But then if there's a family member that will play with you and will play with your toys and pays a lot of attention to you, then you want to make that person happy, and you want to do whatever it is that makes them happy, because they will then pay more attention to you. And if they start giving a boy dolls to play with and dressing them up in makeup and dressing them up in skirts and dresses and things like this, you know, that's what causes it. That's what causes this confusion. And instead of looking at what it is that's causing this problem, we just seem to be saying, oh, it's perfectly fine, it's absolutely wonderful that thousands more children are now claiming to be born into the different gender. Instead of looking for the cause of it, we're trying to pretend that everything is okay, and it's not okay. It's the torture of these children is what's actually going on. And a lot of them, it turns out, are actually on the autistic spectrum as well. About a third of the referrals, I think, to the Tavistock Center in Britain are on the autistic spectrum. And of course the doctors can't say, well, it might be something to do with the autism, because then they're not affirming the supposed chosen gender of the patient, and they can actually be struck off for pointing out that this may be caused by something else. So you've also got body dysmorphia, depression, anorexia, eating disorders. They're all associated with this. And also you get especially girls who get a little bit older, and you know, they want the attention. And if they say they're transsexual, they get all the attention at school, and they get to determine what the teacher calls them, and they become the center of attention. You've also got kids that, you know, may have lesbian or homosexual leanings, but that's not the most fashionable thing now. The most fashionable thing to be is a transsexual. So they end up claiming to be trans, and there's a big, you know, there's a big movement among the homosexual community against this, because they feel that these transsexuals are actually homosexuals that are being taken away from them. So it's split the gay movement as well. I think Stonewall in Britain has split in half over this subject. So it's not that it's just us that are talking about this, and that it's not a good thing and it needs to be investigated. It's, you know, these other communities as well that, as you say, Grandpa, actually came out in support of this and to draw attention to it. I wasn't actually aware of that until you brought that up.
What exactly, Grandpa? What exactly does the gag order cover? Because usually it has to do with talking to the media, but does that cover private conversations? Who exactly are they not allowed to talk to?
My understanding is both parents aren't allowed to talk to the media about it. They're not allowed to talk, basically, to air the dirty laundry. So it's shut all of that down. And just to expand a little bit on what Sven was saying right there, I mean, it's this, for one thing, this is tragic no matter what the ultimate outcome is. This child, again, I can't imagine how toxic this environment must be in. This child is the victim here. I mean, we can sit here and talk about, is this a big picture, positive things, but for this child, this whole thing is a negative, toxic thing, and you just have to feel bad. We live in a clown world. I mean, prepubescent children are basically asexual. I mean, back in my day, if you had a little girl and she liked playing with Tonka trucks and climbing trees and rolling around in the mud, that was considered normal. You would say, oh, well, she's a tomboy. But now here in clown world, she must be transgender, and these adults are supposed to be adults start talking about, well, when are we going to start transitioning? She's a tomboy. She likes playing with trucks in the dirt and climbing trees with the other little boys, and she goes out there and plays football. That is a normal thing. This is not some sort of weirdo thing. Same thing, a little boy who's living with his mother, and he might decide to play dress up and put her shoes on and clump around the house or something. That is normal. It doesn't mean the kid is trans. It doesn't mean the kid has decided he's a girl. He's just playing. It's seven. Tomorrow he may decide he's a dinosaur, and a T-Rex, and he's going around the house. I mean, this is supposed to be normal. This is supposed to be normal childhood stuff. And our children can't even have a normal childhood anymore. And these agendas, this guy, I applaud the father. He stood up, because this is an ultimate submission. It's one thing, they do these things to you. They do these things to your society, and you submit, you submit, you submit. But if you'll stand by and let them victimize your children, then you'll go along with anything. You'll absolutely go, I mean, if you'll let people, usually for most people, that's the line. You might spit all over me, you might spit all over what I believe in, but when it comes to targeting your children, if you'll submit to that, you'll submit to anything. I mean, what's the next line? I mean, if you'll stand by while they do this sort of things to your children, victimize your children, then you'll go along with anything. There's absolutely, I can't imagine there being another line. It's just sad. I feel bad for the kid. I really do, because this child, I mean, what's happened has happened. This will never go away. The internet is forever. This kid's name will be forever associated. He's grown. If someone Googles his name, this stuff is going to come up, and it's just sad. It's so toxic that I can't believe, this mother would actually, not have it in her to put this child's best interest forward. I don't see, I don't know. It's just, it's overall disgusting. I mean, it's kind of had a positive outcome in the sense that, somebody stepped in with some sanity, but nothing's going to change the fact that this poor kid ultimately is the victim of this entire agenda.
Well, at least he's in the right place now, isn't he? And he's with the right people. With his father. Well, one country that certainly wouldn't be standing up for that is Russia. And I do believe you've got some positive news stories from Russia to bring us, Matt.
Well, with Putin, it's really one white pill after another to a great extent. One of the things I wanted to mention, and it didn't get a lot of mainstream attention, is that the rate of alcohol consumption in Russia has gone down by something like 40% since 2006. And part of this is because the state has engaged in a healthy living program where they subsidize certain things. Remember, in the 1990s, the top male or the average male life span was 57. That's how badly the country was destroyed after the Soviet Union fell. So that's one of the reasons the population was disappearing. So when Putin takes over, building families and promoting healthy living, of course, alcoholism was all over the place. And a lot of the problems were because no one had any money these were coming from home stills. So people were being poisoned by this stuff. But the fact that that's a pretty great decline in alcohol, obesity, all kinds of things are falling in Russia, which, of course, we have the opposite in this country. And it shows you that a government that's properly constituted can have an impact. If no one else is going to do it, and the state has no choice but to do it. The numbers differ, but they even go so high as 50% decline, not just in home stills, but in general, and a decline in obesity as well. And there is a connection between alcohol consumption and mental illness. So admission to mental hospitals has gone down to a great extent. This has to do with the fact that the economy is much better. Things are improving. You know, Peter the Great was the one who introduced alcohol to Russia. There was no alcohol problem in Russia prior to him. Russia was one of the driest countries in Europe, along with Norway, up until the 18th century. And he introduced vodka, which is not a Russian drink. He introduced it to, as well as tobacco, which the church had immediately condemned, into Russia. And it slowly but surely became almost a national drink of Russians, which it never was before. It was an import. And that battle is still being fought. So the state took over this. It was able to challenge the corporations that were promoting unhealthy eating, processed foods, you know, Putin's position on GMOs and everything else. This is a whole agenda of promoting healthy living, especially given how badly things were for the average person in by 1997, where you had, you know, people dying at very young ages, partially from alcoholism, partially from just straight up poverty, not being able to eat properly. So you had the population finally growing. You have the 20 or 25% deduction on taxes for every child you have, which has been adopted, I think, in Hungary, too, which is, you know, Hitler's big program. You have it in France to some extent because the population was going down so quickly. That's been reversed. And now you have a net population increase amongst ethnic Russians and ethnic Belarusians because of this. So it can work. It does work. But the state can't be connected to corporate interests in order for this to happen. He's independent enough to challenge the institutions that were promoting this stuff, whether it be alcohol or processed foods or GMOs and everything else. When the state is not captured by private interests, it could take independent action. And that's what's happening there. And the results so far, just since 2006, have been extraordinary. It's a great, one of the great victories of the Putin administration. And this is, it got mostly, I read this in the Russian press, but I don't know if this has been in the American press or not. I really would doubt it. But from 2006 to now, you have a much healthier, longer lived, and less alcoholic population by huge numbers.
Well, I think it says something too. I mean, when you have a case of where the people as a people can start having pride in themselves again. I mean, you were talking about the rates here, Dr. Johnson, like in America, the obesity rates. And you think about, because people, obesity, yes, we have these horrible processed foods, high fructose corn syrup, GMO, all of this stuff that plays into it as well. But people are actually literally medicating themselves with food, drugs. And people say, well, why? Well, why? Well, look around. I mean, you look in the media, you look anywhere, and the message is constantly that you suck. You know, your people suck, your country sucks, everything you've ever done sucks. The whole reason the rest of the world isn't doing well is because of you. Everything is your fault. It's an amazing thing, I think, that when the people as a nation can start taking some pride in themselves again. And I think that's kind of one of the hidden things too that Putin has brought about in Russia is the people have pride in themselves as a nation again. They feel good about themselves. Things were so bad in the 90s, as you pointed out. I mean, under the Yeltsin disaster, the people just had no kind of sense of you know, of self, of worth, of any kind of value. And Putin has brought that back to the people. And here in America, I mean, we have nothing. The people are called, everything is a negative, negative. Everything is bad. I was pointing out recently, you know, the old time communists back in, say, the 30s, you know, they were promising the people, you know, the labor unions were communists and they were promising the workers, well, you won't be exploited. I mean, they lied, but they were saying, we're going to stop you from being exploited. We're going to make your lives better. These commies we have like in the West now, they're not offering anything except everything's your fault, screeching at you, telling you to shut up. It's just this constant bombardment, I think, of negativity. And you have somebody like in Russia stand up and say, no, we're going to start turning things around. No, you can take pride in yourself. You can take pride in who you are as a people. And I think it's important, really illustrate that things can be turned around. You know, I mean, you're much more versed in these things than I am, Dr. Johnson, about how bad things were in Russia in the Yeltsin years. And it can be turned around. People mouth off about Weimar Germany, but how many people actually know how bad it was? Because if you actually do any kind of study, people have no idea how bad, how degenerate Weimar Germany was. And in a short period of time, it was turned around. And here in the West, in America, yeah, things are bad. But it doesn't mean those things can be turned around. I think Russia serves as a real white pill in this case, in the fact that, you know, we know that, hey, things can be turned around.
Well, you know, one of the definitions of genocide in the UN Convention on Genocide is the deliberate reduction of the population through propaganda. This is, I read this in Michael Hoffman many years ago, and I looked it up, and it's true. It's not just shooting people. It's not just, it's also creating an environment where people don't want to reproduce. That's actually literally, I think it's section, I want to say section 3, but I could be wrong. It's one of the definitions of genocide. So he is, if you convince people that they're ignorant, that they're worthless, and therefore they don't reproduce, that's just as bad, according to them, as killing someone. And they're absolutely right. And I think that's exactly why the white population doesn't reproduce in the West. And Putin was able to turn around because in the 90s, you know, it wasn't just economic problems; it was that they had no identity. They Western, are they socialist, are they not? You know, and you had every conceivable ideological group fighting it out, very similar to Weimar Germany, similar to South Korea after the Korean War. All of these countries were turned around by a strong leader. These were independent of corporate interests, and that's Putin was reversing a almost deliberate genocidal policy, because that is one of the definitions of it. And this is what happens when you tell people that they're worthless. And that's a huge part of this that I hadn't thought about initially until you bring it up. But that's a big deal. That's one of the even bigger white pills of this whole thing.
Are you back with us, Sven?
Didn't Putin, you know, enact some ways to try to encourage white Russians to produce more white Russians because so many people were having abortions? I can remember him giving a speech where he was talking about white genocide and the need to encourage Russians to produce more of them. The thing is, if you have that founding stock there, then you can always bring things back from the abyss. And not just racially. I mean, one of the good things I think Putin's done recently is ban GMO entirely throughout Russia. And set up a similar sort of thing to an ark, where they're putting in seeds that haven't been tampered with, and Russia is hoping to corner the market in non-GMO foods, foods which haven't been tampered with, foods that haven't been polluted, the organic side of things as well. That there's a big push for that, and all the while that there is this continent there pretty much that is not going to be messing around genetically. We're still going to have the pure stock for everything else there. So, I mean, whatever happens, we should be able to pull ourselves back thanks to the forward thinking of what's going on over there. I mean, Matt, can you talk a bit more about the GMO foods over there and the ban on that?
Well, you covered the main points. You know, it wasn't that long ago, you know, prior to the Soviet era, that Russia fed the world. Russia was the world's greatest grain producer. The surpluses were overwhelming. Same thing for sugar from beets, another huge area, cotton. I mean, Russia was dominant and completely self-sufficient in these things. So self-sufficiency is a big part of the Russian agenda. Very few countries could actually be totally self-sufficient. I think the U.S. is one, and Russia is another. I don't think China could be because they don't have local sources of fuel, but Russia could be completely independent. In the Tsarist era, you didn't have tons of imports. You mentioned cornering the market on non-GMO foods. This is a serious matter. Russia has so much land and so much very good land and such a history of communal farming that it can be done. They're just now approaching Tsarist levels of production. But of course, we know that there's simply too much food in the world. American farmers are so efficient that they're being have to be paid not to plant. Other than the GMO thing, 5G is at the moment banned in Russia because the studies that have been done on these delta waves that in essence imitate sleep, creating a sort of a zombified population. Now, I'm no expert on the EMF stuff, but I know some very sensitive people who are very sensitive to EMF, and their lives are miserable. When 5G is instituted, you're going to have these little antennas all over the place. It's a short range rather than a long range thing. So you're going to have these little towers everywhere. And 5G uses, among other things, delta waves that imitate the sleep cycle. And this was the reason that Putin had banned, and China has banned it. And as far as I know, and I know Russia absolutely has banned it. So Putin's plan seems to be to have these healthy, literally woke people having large families. Nationalism and especially Christian nationalism is mandated in this public school system. You know, this is the reason why the West is making war on it. This is the ideological antithesis of everything that the West is. So any defeat of Western capitalist interests is a good thing. And the only entity that could do this is the state, if it's large enough and powerful enough and independent enough and popular enough. Even there's not that many countries who could pull that off. The 5G thing is just as serious. I could have brought that up too. Banning 5G, from what I know of it, this is a disastrous thing. But the delta wave cycle that it promotes or that it provokes is frightening. I mean, you're talking about an almost a zombified population saturated with this 5G technology and these short range towers. So he sees Russia, you know, in the long term, which if you're not connected to corporate matters, you know, you can do that. You can think long term. You're not interested in anyone else's profit. He's popular enough and has his own sources of funding. It doesn't matter. Which, by the way, you know, Trump used to have, too. Until he threw that away. But Putin has many institutions in the country that support him. Trump has nobody. He has no institutions who support him. So as we remember when Trump was running, I think one of the great things I said, he's not beholden to corporate interests. He's not taking their money. Well, that didn't turn out as well as we thought. But Putin turned on his initial financiers and realized that he doesn't need them. He doesn't have to take orders. And that's why he could do something as extreme as banning 5G. It's not going to affect their internet. It doesn't affect speed at all. This has a more nefarious agenda. So it's all connected.
You know, I believe they, for the first time, isolated the Russian internet from the rest of the world the other day, just to show that they could have their own internet there, basically. I mean, all these sanctions and all these pressures that have actually been put on Russia have ended up having the opposite effect. It's just encouraged Russia to start producing its own technology and its own way of doing things. And I do think that Putin puts the needs of the Russian people ahead of everything else. And that's why he's banning GMO. That's why he's banning this 5G. Instead of in the West, where the people serve the economy, it seems that in Russia, that he's trying to make the economy serve the people and improve the lives of the people, the length of life that has massively increased since the 80s and the fall of the Soviet Union. So yeah, plenty of good things to hear about Russia there. Well, I've been having lots of technical problems here at my end. Hopefully the recording will have come out okay. I know you two have been able to hear yourselves okay, but thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Hopefully we will have an Area in Britannia for you next Monday in the new year. So until then, have a great week and have a happy new year.
That's the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes, and footwork in peg cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot.